Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with Maestro Joanne Folletta, music director of the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. Celebrating her 25th year with the organization, Folletta is a renowned conductor who has held prestigious positions with orchestras worldwide. She's a champion for women in music, both on and off the podium, and has garnered acclaim for her recordings and innovative programming. If you have a moment, please read her impressive biography at bpo.org. This interview was in support of Maestro Folletta's 25th year at the organization, as well as the upcoming program entitled Beyond the Planets, which we speak about in this interview. For tickets and information for Beyond the Planets, as well as myriad other concerts and performances, visit bpo.org. Here is my interview with Maestro Folletta.
Maestro Joanne Folletta, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
I'm delighted to do that, Daniel. Thank you.
I'm wondering if we could start off. I'd love to ask if there's a story from your childhood where you can trace the impetus for your career.
Well, I can. I started studying music, actually, classical guitar when I was 7 years old on my 7th birthday. But I think that the key moment in my life was when I was 11 years old, and I went to a concert. My parents knew how much I loved playing guitar, so I went to a concert at Carnegie Hall with my family, and I heard an orchestra for the first time, and that changed my life. It was the American Symphony. Leopold Stokowski was conducting, and he conducted Beethoven Sixth. I mean, among other things, but I don't remember those. I do remember the Beethoven Sixth, and I remember feeling totally transported somewhere. I mean, as much as an 11-year-old can understand what's happening, I just was thrilled by it. And I said to my father, that's what I want to do. I want to be a conductor. I want to do what he does, which seemed to me to be enabling them to do the great musical job they were doing. So I decided then, because I didn't know what Stokowski was doing. I didn't know anything about conducting. I just knew my guitar and my repertoire, but I started studying everything I could from that day.
And speaking of studying, you studied with Bernstein. I'd love to ask, did the film Maestro affect you in any way?
It did, because we had the very good luck of having Bernstein come to Juilliard to work with us. It was always a terrifying experience, Daniel, I have to say, terrifying for like the three or four of us who was a small class, because he was so electrifying and so famous and so immense as a personality and as a musician. But he was kind to us, and yes, I think the film, in some ways, the film was a very wonderful film, I thought, very strong film, but it didn't show him in the way we knew him as a truly great musician. I had wished there were more ways of showing that. It showed his relationship, which was complicated with his wife and with his family. But I wish there were more of an emphasis on the completely extraordinarily fantastic musician he was. And most people who knew him or read about him know that.
Well, thank you. Did it bring up anything for you of remembering where sort of where you were then, or any kind of sense memory of being in the rooms of Juilliard?
It does. It did. It did. And I went back about a month ago to conduct at Juilliard again, and being in that room brought back an intense feeling of Bernstein walking through the door. And he was actually quite short. I don't think people realize that, because they always saw him on the podium, but he had this incredible leonine head. It's just a craggy, beautiful face. And he was always smoking with a little cigarette holder, which he wasn't supposed to be, but nobody ever told him he couldn't. He was the atmosphere in the room changed the moment he walked in it, and I remember feeling that electricity. And he's always taught us the same sort of thing. He wasn't so much concerned about how we were beating and was this clear, was that in the right place. No, he said, "What is it about? It's about the emotion." And one particularly vivid thing that I remember was studying Carmen with him, the opera Carmen, you know, trying to be so careful. And he said, what are you doing? He said, you know, where are you right now? You're in the bullring and in Seville, and it's like 110 degrees and the sun is beating down on you and the crowd is screaming. You can even smell the blood of the bull. That's what we want to hear in this music, that kind of emotion. And that stayed with me, that it wasn't about clarity. It wasn't about being right. It was about the emotion, the love, the passion. And I don't know, you've seen video of him, I'm sure, Daniel. That was what he was all about. He loved this music, and you could see it. You could see it in everything he did.
Well, that's clear in your work as well, right? And palpable, yeah. Even as you speak about it, right, that I'm kind of feeling it as you're sort of describing your experience and saying, yes, I've seen that at the BPO.
Well, I do love the music, and I feel like I'm living my dream life, that 11-year-old, you know, had this desire, knowing nothing about conducting, but I feel so lucky, because it is like being in the middle of a dream. I mean, Daniel, when you're in the middle of the orchestra and they're around you, that team is frighteningly good. I mean, it's like scary. You think about the knowledge, the emotional intention that they have, the dedication to music, the lessons that they've taken, thousands of lessons, the tens of thousands of hours of practicing. This is a team like no other in the world. I mean, they're so intricately prepared to be great, and they are great. So we do that together. That's we do that together. We live through that performance, even those rehearsals, and the same in this music, which is a different world. It's I can't imagine a better place to be than on that podium, listening to those musicians.
I often say to people too, the experience of listening to any kind of live music, especially unamplified live music, is that it is a vibrational experience. And so when you're in Kleinhans, the vibration that's coming off the stage and also through you or through whichever conductor happens to be there that day, is it affects you in a way that is beyond just a musical experience. It's an energetic experience and a vibrational experience.
You're so right. It's a physical experience. And, you know, I can tell, you know, people come into the concert, sit down at 7:30, maybe a bit distracted, maybe a bit, you know, tired out from the day, or even struggling with some problems that they have. They sit there feeling one way, and somehow, without their knowing it, and without any of us knowing exactly how it happens, they change. They become changed. And when they leave the hall 9:30, it's as if all of that has been washed away. I mean, that they've gone to a different place. We can't really put it into words, but I think that's why people come to concerts, because you do go to sort of like an island of sanity, of something that moves you in a way you never have to explain. You don't even have to talk about it. And it's a gift. It's a gift to everyone. And I just wish that more people would come in and know that this is all for them, just for them to sort of bring them to a kind of tranquil, special place.
I'd love to ask, your bio on your website is incredible, and I'm going to put it in the show notes so that people can look at it and read it from your website. But what I really noticed in looking at it was that your biography, or your bio, is a bio of firsts, specifically the first woman in many cases and in many job opportunities. Can you speak a little bit about that experience, and also potentially the responsibility of being a woman in the first woman in many of those spaces?
Well, you know, Daniel, I think the good thing is I didn't realize as I was doing it that it was a first, because my parents were not professional musicians. They loved music. We listened to music all the time. We went to concerts, but none of us was aware, and I must have been very naive in going to concerts, that I never saw a woman on the podium for most of my young life. I didn't. And so I heard when I went to Manus College of Music for the first time that this was a career that was hadn't been really fully explored by women, you know, wasn't really open for women at that point. And that was the first I heard of it. So I always say to people, I can't take any credit for being a pioneer, because I didn't know I was a pioneer, but I became aware of it working and learning and going to different countries, especially Europe, and realizing how unusual this was, and again, how skeptical some people were about women conducting. So now I feel that I can help other women who reach out to me lo a lot. I mean, a lot of conductors do, and men and women, but the young women particularly, because they are facing some of the same feelings, some of the same difficulties, and they need to talk it through. They need to find out how to deal with certain things. And so now I can use my experience that just happened to me in a way to help them, and I'm glad about that.
Thank you. You're currently credited as being the musical, excuse me, the music director of the Buffalo or the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. What are the responsibilities of that position?
Oh, it's very different than just conducting. It's really being having the responsibility for the overall health of the organization, artistic health of the organization, with my partner Dan Hart, who has the responsibility of the fiscal and sort of structural health of the BPO. And that's a great, it's a great partnership. But everything from what we play, who we hire as new members of the orchestra, who we bring in as our guest artists or guest conductors, do we go on tour? Do we commission a work? All of that essentially comes down to me, of course, with a lot of input from the team and from our musicians as well.
How has the BPO and the city of Buffalo shifted since you arrived?
Oh, it's changed a lot. It's changed a great deal. And you know what I feel proud, and I know our musicians do the same. That we were part, we have been part of that renaissance. When I first came, the Buffalo Philharmonic was in some difficult financial situation. It had been for many, many years, and we weren't sure if we would get to a place of strength and health. We really weren't sure, but the community supported us, and we really are so grateful to them because they never gave up on us, even in times that were difficult for everyone in Buffalo, really hard times. They never wanted to give up on the Philharmonic. So we've gotten stronger, we've gotten more viable, we've gotten healthier, we've done different things that we've never done before, lots of recordings, going to Carnegie Hall again after decades of not going, going on tour to Florida every couple of years. It's been good for us. We've grown a lot. I mean, the orchestra has grown in strength and in imagination and in independence so much.
That's beautiful. I want to reflect too to our listeners that I think that organizations like the BPO are so important to sort of these cities because I've lived in different cities around the US, and some of them are kind of like newer cities, and something feels like it's missing without the kind of old infrastructure of organizations like a Philharmonic Orchestra not in the city, right? It feels like a city, but it doesn't have the same atmosphere or environment. And I think it's so exciting that, the citizens of Buffalo continue to support the organization, and that the organization is still around because it does make a palpable difference when you're in a city.
It does. And you know, we're here for the city. We're not making music for the US. We're making music for Buffalo, Erie County, and everyone who can reach us, can come and hear us. And that makes us very valid. We're connected to them. You know, the one thing I noticed is when I first came is how much the people in those seats loved the orchestra. And I think it's partly Kleinhans because you sit in Kleinhans and you're very close to the orchestra and they're very close to you and they're looking out at you and they're playing to you. I always get that sense that our musicians are playing to their public. They're just giving it their all for the people that they're sitting just feet, several feet from. And it's a great relationship and that makes a big difference. You know, one of the gurus of the classical music world during the pandemic when things were looking very grim for orchestras, said the orchestras that will survive, the only orchestras that will survive are those who have good family around them. And that's so much, our musicians said at that point when they heard it, that's us. We have our family around us. They care about us. They may not be able to give big gifts, they may not be able to give gifts at all, but they come to the concerts, they support us. We have that family, and that's true. And that's how we survived, and that's how we continue to go on and stay healthy in challenging times.
That is beautiful. Speaking of travel, I years ago taught at Interlochen Arts Camp, and so I still receive their emails. And I was so excited to see and thought, oh my goodness, like what a collection that you are traveling to Interlochen at
Yes.
some point or have traveled to Interlochen, I'm sure. And it just made me think about how often you are traveling and bringing your work to different places or different cities. What inspires your desire to travel to different cities and different orchestras?
I learned so much from them. I mean, this week I'm in Cleveland working with the Cleveland Institute of Music, and I learn a lot from young people because they're playing these pieces for the first time. So all of a sudden I see it through their eyes. I discover things that I had taken for granted, you know, I hadn't thought about, but they sort of reteach it to me as first time players. Okay, there's a lot of mistakes that happen. There's a lot of stumbling here and there, but by the end of it, we've gone on this journey that is very deeply satisfying and teaches me things. So I do travel a lot and with all kinds of orchestras, including young people, but that I do mostly in the summer. And Interlochen is one of my favorites because it's a high school orchestra, and that's the only really high school orchestra I work with. They are amazing young people, truly exploring, maybe playing in a full symphony for the very first time, any full symphony, and being astonished that they can do it. So it's very just kind of giving me like a rebirth of love for this music, seeing them love it.
On the subject of lessons, in an incredibly accomplished career like yours, there have to be, or had to be, a lot of lessons learned along the way. What is something that you learned that may have been hard won that really sticks with you?
Well, you know, I think what I've learned and what has really informed my conducting now through these years is to trust the musicians and to believe in them and give them space. I mean, I think that's what has worked so well with Buffalo Philharmonic. We trust each other, and it's not as if I'm controlling them. It's as if I'm establishing a landscape where they can bloom and be excellent. And that allows for astonishing performances if they don't feel controlled, if they feel supported rather than controlled. So letting go of the concept of control, which we learned so strongly in music school, and turning it into a more Eastern concept, maybe of creating the possibility of and letting them do it. And that's why I think the BPO particularly has a very vibrant individual personality. It's no other orchestra has quite their kind of energy level, their risk-taking, their sense of adventure. Like they go for it, you know, they go beyond that forte. They are extremely expressive. And of course, because of that, they excel in romantic music and post-romantic music, because they are a very, very exuberant orchestra. I mean, they have an exuberant personality. And one person in the audience told me that and used that word, and I've liked it because it does describe them. So I've learned to give them every opportunity to be themselves, and I love the results, especially in Buffalo. It feels so comfortable.
It's wonderful. A few weeks ago, I spoke to Julian and Jerry Schwarz, and I had an amazing session with them. I wish that would have been a podcast, because what was a 600 word piece became kind of a 30-minute. Amazing conversation. And in our speak or in our sort of conversation, they said, they were talking about the foot piece, and they said, we wanted to try to get played for years and years. And it took until Joanne Folletta said, do you have any interesting projects? I know you can play this piece. I know you can play that piece. I know you can play 20 or 30 different concertos, but is there something interesting? I just was so struck by your passion for finding new pieces and for working with the BPO and looking for something unexpected or bringing something unexpected to Buffalo audiences. And I'm wondering, after sort of 25 years, you are still approaching this position with so much passion. Where do you find the passion?
From the musicians and from the music. I mean, absolutely. And I love to find new music. And that doesn't only mean composed in the 21st century, because I had a wonderful experience when I was still in school working with the Women's Philharmonic in San Francisco. So a long time ago, and I was still at Juilliard, but they asked me to be their music director, and they only played works by women. I knew no works by women because I had been brought up as a conductor, studying Brahms and Mozart and, you know, just the traditional canon. But I went there and I realized there is so much music I don't know. No one knows. And we have a right to know this music. So that's just kind of set off a spark of what else is there? And then when Naxos approached me, when I became music director, and they said, Klaus Heyman said to me, we'd like to have an American orchestra in our group of orchestras that we work with. And we were thinking of the Buffalo Philharmonic and you, would you accept this? So, yes, well, we will. And they said, but I have to tell you, this is Klaus, we don't want a Brahms cycle. We don't want a Mahler cycle. We don't want all the Mozart symphonies. We have all of that. Find us something different. It doesn't have to be new. It could be neglected. It could be lost. It could be something unjustly not played. So we all had to become kind of detectives again, explorers. And we've done that. And so I think it's kept for me, even the traditional music, alive, because now I think of that in the same way as I'm thinking of a piece by Joseph Suk or Marcel Tieberg, not known by anybody, but that same sense of, okay, what is this all about, even if it's a Beethoven symphony?
It's clear that that's really become a value. And again, that's reflected in the interview with Julian and Jerry Schwartz, that this is a value of you and of the BPO. I'm interested to know, what would an ideal program at the BPO look like for you? How might you categorize a perfect night at the BPO?
Well, there would be one piece on there that people love and maybe know. Usually, no. That could be the symphony. It could be a concerto. It could be the, you know, two odd pieces and then the Tchaikovsky first piano concerto. But there is that sort of kind of beloved treasure that's on there that people will say, oh, I love that piece. I know that piece. But there will also be a piece that is not known. And again, it could come from the 19th century, just never played, a piece by Fanny Mendelssohn, for instance, or Lily Boulanger, this wonderful music, but not in the general season, you know, seasons of orchestras. And then maybe a piece that is brand new with a composer there. For instance, next week we have our Planets program, but on it is also a wonderful new flute concerto just written for Marina Piccinini. And that piece is based upon the poet Rumi and this kind of Buddhist thinking about what is the universe? Is it the planets that we're seeing or is it us? And that was his thought, that the universe is inside us. So a brand new piece, which is wonderful. She's a great virtuoso. And it's a fun piece too, because it's filled with joy, as he was, about the universe in ecstatic movement, the name of that piece, in ecstatic motion. So that's the kind of thing that I love for people to leave the hall talking about it. Even if it's, I'm not sure I like that piece, but did have that interesting solo or it had, you know, I love the way it ended and just kind of faded into the, you know, the ether. I think talking about music is good. And understanding what's most important to me, that it's a continuum. We go back to probably Vivaldi as Vivaldi and Corelli as the first things that we would play with the orchestra, Bach, and then going up to a piece like that was written in 2022. I mean, so it is a continuum. The orchestra is going to keep on going and keep on creating. And I love that exists together on our programs.
You know, it's funny, when I write my interview questions and really think about it, I always know when an interview subject is sort of so generous and so fantastic, when they just sort of kind of naturally answer the next questions that I have. And so what was amazing was that my next question was, on Friday, April 5th, you will be conducting a program entitled Beyond the Planets. What can you tell us about the evening? And then my next question was, when people come to the BPO, how do you hope they leave? And you answered both of those questions kind of in your last response. But I'd love to kind of just go back and underscore, on Friday, April 5th, the Beyond the Planets. What can you tell us about this evening? You mentioned the one piece. What else could people come in and expect?
Well, of course, the Planets. You know, the Planets is by Gustav Holst is one of the one of the most dramatic, most exuberant pieces ever written. There are seven planets in it because Earth is not included. He's talking about the planets from our perspective on Earth, and Pluto had not been discovered yet. So, but I think Pluto actually, after the fact, became an unplanet. It's not really considered a planet. So we're back to those seven. And he wrote the most vivid music about the personality of the planets. Now, the personality of the planets based upon their names, like Mars is the god of war, and Jupiter, the goddess of love, Saturn, the god of time, all of these incredible images in Technicolor. So that will be, everyone knows that. They know Jupiter, they know Mars, they know this music. And to hear it, as you said before, Daniel, to hear it with your body, to feel the vibrations of this enormous orchestra playing this piece. But we wanted to include some new music. I mean, that's the big piece that people know. And one of them is this wonderful new flute concerto about the universe in ecstatic motion, you know, just a beautiful idea of we being a connected part to the universe joyfully with our flute soloist Marina. And there's another wonderful piece by Nina Shekhar. Nina is one of the most important Indian American composers. She's a young woman whose background is in India. And she's written this piece, Exploring Light and Dark. Exploring the concept, I thought, what a beautiful way, 10 minutes on the eve of this eclipse to explore light and dark. And it really is a new work. I mean, with a lot of kind of eerie sounds coming from the orchestra. She said she wrote it to get people to really listen, because she thinks as a society, we do a lot of talking and not enough listening. And that's probably always been true, but It is a truly beautiful exploration of, you know, the light bursting forth and then subsiding. So I'm very excited about this concert. And I think that given the excitement in Buffalo of the eclipse, it's a perfect thing to come to on Saturday night or Friday morning to explore what is a momentous occasion for us.
We will definitely include the link in the show notes for people can come and join you for tickets for that day. My final question is, what is your vision for the future of the BPL? You've been with the institution for a long time, and hopefully you aren't going anywhere soon, but what do you hope your legacy is?
Well, it's still evolving. You know, the BPL is the personality of its players. That's what it is. And we are adding a lot of new players through attrition. The pandemic caused some people to think about retiring, and people have come in. And so those people are joining our family and bringing new facets to who we are. So it continues to evolve. It's continues to be an incredibly musical orchestra. There's no limit. I mean, at this point, the BPL can play anything, and they can play it with their own view and their own personality, and they have an incredible sound. I always miss that sound when I'm conducting elsewhere. I miss the BPO sound, you know, that just that first downbeat and the incredible creamy European dark sound that we have, partly because of Kleinhans, partly because of who they are. So there's a lot of good things ahead. We're still continuing to record, and that's been a big part of our legacy around the world, of people who will never come to Buffalo but know the Buffalo Philharmonic. And going on tour, we're looking to continue to commission for our own players, which is a legacy in itself. We just had a new oboe concerto that was very important in the repertoire, written for Henry Ward. And so that's a new part of a new direction we're going in.
Well, those are my questions. Thank you so much for your time. I always like to end an interview, though, by asking, is there anything that you feel left unsaid or anything that you'd like to share before we close out?
And your questions were perfect, Daniel. Thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, I enjoyed talking to you, and I really enjoyed your article on Jerry and Julian.
Thank you. It wrote itself. I mean, they were so generous with their time and, you know, and also spoke so highly of you that I'm so thankful and excited that we had a moment to connect. So thank you very much. It was really nice to chat. And I look forward to seeing you at the podium very soon.
Well, thank you. And thanks for all your time and everything you're doing for us. Thank you.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I was so struck with Maestro Folletta's generosity and really enjoyed my conversation with her. For tickets to Beyond the Planets and any of their other programs, please visit bpo.org. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Addison Schoonmacher engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.